optimal minimalism.
At this altitude, I can run flat out for a half mile before my hands start shaking.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Now would have seemed an appropriate time.
What if I did the opposite?
I'm a cybernetic organism, living tissue over a metal endoskeleton.
Lee Tim Ferriss Show.
This episode is brought to you by Athletic Greens. I get asked all the time what I would take if I could only take one supplement. The answer is invariably Athletic Greens. I view it as all-in-one nutritional insurance. I recommended it, in fact, in the 4-Hour Body. This is more than 10 years ago, and I did not get paid to do so. With approximately 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients, you'd be very hard-pressed to find a more nutrient-dense and comprehensive formula on the market. It has multivitamins, multimineral greens complex, probiotics and prebiotics for gut health, an immunity formula, digestive enzymes, adaptogens, and much more. I usually take it once or twice a day just to make sure I've covered my bases if I missed anything I'm not aware of. Of course, I focus on nutrient-dense meals to begin with. That's the basis. But Athletic Greens makes it easy to get a lot of nutrition when whole foods aren't readily available. From travel packets, I always have them in my bag when I'm zipping around. Right now, Athletic Greens is giving my audience a special offer on top of their all-in-one formula, which is a free vitamin D supplement and 5 free travel packs with your first subscription purchase. Many of us are deficient in vitamin D. I found that true for myself, which is usually produced in our bodies from sun exposure. So adding a vitamin D supplement to your daily routine is a great option for additional immune support. Support your immunity, gut health, and energy by visiting athleticgreens.com/TFS. You'll receive up to a year's supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your subscription. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/TFS, as in Tim Ferriss Show. athleticgreens.com/TFS.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello, boys and girls. This is Tim Ferriss, and welcome to another episode of The Tim Ferriss Show, where it is my job to deconstruct world-class performers of all different types, from the worlds of business, military, entertainment, athletics, and sometimes combinations of different fields. And that is the case with this interview. Of course, the objective is to tease out tactics, routines, habits, specifics that you can use. And my guest this time around is, by popular request, Jason Khalipa. That's Khalipa. You can say hello at Jason Khalipa on Instagram, Twitter, etc. He is one of the fittest men in the world, a title that was officially his when he earned it at the CrossFit Games and won the CrossFit Games in 2008. He is an 8-time CrossFit Games competitor, a 3-time Team USA CrossFit member, and among other athletic feats, he has deadlifted 550 pounds, squatted 450 pounds, and performed 64 pull-ups at a body weight of 210 pounds. This podcast, very important note, of course, you are most likely listening to this as audio only. We have a bunch of video bonuses and tutorials from Jason recorded in my home gym and elsewhere, which you can find at youtube.com/Tim Ferriss, 2 R's and 2 S's. Keeping in mind that beyond sports, Jason is also a very successful entrepreneur. He is the founder and CEO of NC Fit, which has more than 20 locations in 8 different cities. And he is the co-founder of Box to Business, which is a nonprofit that helps gyms become profitable businesses. Jason uses the proceeds from Box to Business to help fight pediatric cancer. We cover a ton of stuff in this episode, a lot of specifics, a lot of stories, including his training and diet, the hardest workouts he's ever performed, the mentor who taught him how to sell anything, which is hilarious, how he and his family have coped with his daughter's battle with cancer, how he has navigated going from competitive athlete to very, very successful business owner, and much, much more. So I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did. Jason is a great guy, and he is very, very generous with sharing his knowledge. And don't forget to check out the tutorial videos, his favorite warm-ups, etc. at youtube.com/Tim Ferriss. Jason, we'll do a quick sound check. Could you please tell me what you had for breakfast?
I had kale smoothie and an egg with bacon on top.
One egg with bacon on top?
One egg.
Whole egg?
Nope, because I was on the road at 4 a.m. I went to Starbucks and I took the sandwich. I took it apart and I just had the egg with the bacon on top.
Nice. And then the kale smoothie was before you left the house?
A kale smoothie was at the gym before shortly after.
What is in the kale smoothie besides kale?
Kale, peanut butter, some of this Progenics, protein powder I like, and almond milk.
Fantastic. Well, I think we're just going to keep rolling since that sound check was so successful. And while my pooch Molly is going to make a racket throwing around an elk antler, we're just going to get to it. So welcome to the show and welcome to my living room. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
And we just had some fun demoing things and certainly learning things. I wasn't demoing anything. I was observing in the gym in the garage. So for people who are listening and want some additional video, which I highly, highly encourage, just go to tim.blog/podcast and click on this episode. Or you can go to YouTube, Tim Ferriss, 2 R's, 2 S's, and you can find a bunch of video. Now, you are considered, and I know you're not going to say this, but a demigod within the world of CrossFit by a lot of people. People look up to you for good reason. And I'm curious to know, if you were to look back at your peak competitive success, what do you think the advantages were that you had or developed? Like, why were you as successful as you were? And of course, you have incredible work ethic and so on. But if you had to sort of dig into that, what do you think the elements were that made you as successful as you were?
I think primarily it was that I really enjoyed training. Mm-hmm. I didn't do it. You know, a lot of people, they like to compete. I didn't necessarily like to compete or did like to compete. I enjoyed competing, but I enjoyed training more. I liked being in an environment that just pushed me. I liked getting comfortable with uncomfortable. I liked leaving the gym and feeling like I just got my butt kicked. It made me feel really good about what I accomplished. And then I went on and tried to accomplish that same concept in the rest of my life, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that was something I really picked up on early on when I first found CrossFit back in 2006. And then I won the CrossFit Games in 08, and I was able to compete 8 more times, mainly because I just loved to train, you know, and the byproduct or the expression of that was my ability to go out there and compete.
Are there any particular workouts that come to mind or exercises, anything that you find particularly enjoyable, even though they might be very painful?
I mean, I like the ones that give you the biggest return, right? I mean, I think if you're doing thrusters, yes, they're very challenging, but they give you a huge return in terms of benefit, in terms of the way you look, in terms of the way you feel, the byproduct of strength. So I think thrusters, burpees, those type of things, if I had to pick several items I would only do or several movements I'd only do for the rest of my life, it'd be things like that. Mm-hmm.
If we were to say, look, well, we're going to look forward in a second. I want to keep focusing on that for a moment. Any particular, if you wanted to gauge, say, the fitness, right? The CrossFitness of anyone for that matter, are there any particular tests that you would put them through to evaluate that? Whether it's like a certain variation of Fran or anything like that?
I would just look at like different metrics. I look at, you know, what is your mile time? How many pull-ups can you complete? What is your max deadlift, back squat, press? And then start looking at a few like the movements that combine both, right? And so I think sometimes there's people that are really good at running and there's some people that are really good at lifting. But I think the beauty is when you can combine those two. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, a lot of like the Frans and the different types of workout, like a Fight Gone Bad score, those are good ways.
What is a Fight Gone Bad?
So Fight Gone Bad was originally created with BJ Penn and Greg Glassman.
Oh yeah.
Long time ago. And basically
this was back when BJ was probably training at the Half Gracie Academy in Mountain View.
Old school, right? Yeah. Long time ago. And essentially what it is 1 minute, 1 minute, 1 minute, five movements. And then you 1 minute rest and you do that for 3 rounds.
What are the 5 movements?
So it's a sumo deadlift high pull. There's a push press. There's a rower, a wall ball, and a box jump. And all the movements are light enough that you can keep moving on them. And so, you know, when BJ finished, when BJ finished, it was like, oh man, that felt like a fight gone bad. And so that's kind of how the story goes.
Just as a random side note, I used to go to these chiropractors, the Jansons, who worked on a lot of fighters. And I remember they described BJ Penn's
hip flexors as the hip flexors of a camel. They said they were just like a quadricep on normal humans.
Just rocks.
If you were to say, want to get someone hooked on exercising,
yeah,
because you enjoyed the training.
Right.
Not everyone enjoys training. So let's say you're taking someone, you want to get them hooked on that drug of training. Is there any particular approach that you would take? I mean, you've coached a lot of people. You've, I'm sure, encountered every different type of person, from NFL player to, say, engineer who's never played sports, and everybody in between. What do you do to get someone hooked so that they continue to come to the gym?
Yes. I mean, I've been really fortunate, you know, over the years. I started a company, NC Fit, and we have a ton of members, and I've been able to look at it and say, hey, what is generally gets them to kind of stay with us? And more times than not, it's starting off slow and then working their way up. I think a lot of people get gung-ho, right? They come in, oh, you know, I want to lose weight. I want to do this, I want to do that. I'll eat whatever you tell me. I'll do whatever you tell me. And then all of a sudden, a month later, they're gone.
Right.
So I think the secret to success is, hey, just take your time, right? This is not a, this is a lifelong journey, right? It's not like a 1 month, you know, fad. It's, you know, I want to be fit and I want to be fit for the rest of my life. And so I think it's important to recognize that and to make small steps towards the right direction. You know, take out sugar, do this, do that, small little steps, then go into the gym and start doing certain stuff. But I think finding a camaraderie, finding a coach and finding a community to support you are rule number one. Mm-hmm. I think that doing it on your own is very challenging. You know, you and I were talking about cooking earlier, and it's like, if I want to learn how to cook, really, really learn how to cook, I could learn from a book. I could learn from maybe watching a show. But to really kind of dive into the nuances, I would need to have someone to kind of show me in the kitchen what I would do next, at least for me, right? I don't have enough experience with it. And so when people go into the gym, sure, they could read books, they could do stuff. But I think having someone there, like a coach, advise them on different things is going to be an easier way for them to get more success from it.
Yeah, I think just to reiterate that, I think the social accountability piece is huge. So having some type of social cohesion is just gigantic. And for people who are listening who might be in the sticks, don't think you have access to that, you can certainly find communities online like coach.me and other sites or services along those lines. But the point you made also that I think is really important to underscore is, in the beginning, focusing on the good program that you will follow versus the perfect program that you'll fit, that you'll quit. Because a lot of people come in, like you said, and they're like, okay, I haven't done anything since college. Now I'm going to do a 2-hour workout 5 times a week as my New Year's resolution. And they just flame out, or they get injured, or fill in the blank. And like you said, they're gone a few weeks later, as opposed to saying, look, since you're starting from zero, let's just do whatever it might be. Half hour workout twice a week, so that you develop the habit, and then you can always make it harder, more complex later. But if you make it too hard, too complex in the beginning, you're going to be gone.
Yeah, like we have a program that we've incorporated called the Rise Program, and what it incorporates is a nutritionist, a mindset coach, and a fitness coach. And for a lot of people, it's all a mindset, right? It's all, for decades, they haven't exercised, they've used food as an outlet or whatever it may be, right? And that's okay, but they need to get over that in their head to truly make an impact on and change for a long time, right? Instead of just making it like this short-term thing, then you really get down to the root of the problem and make it as more of a part of their daily routine instead of just something they do, right? And that starts, but to start it slowly and then work it up is much easier than just to kind of go crazy. And then it just, I haven't seen it work as well.
And then, yeah, right, have a nuclear meltdown and have to restart again for your next New Year's resolution.
That's right.
I'm going to take a couple of questions here that have been volleyed over via the internet, because there are some really good ones, and they range from training to family to business. So we're going to get to that in a second. But I wanted to ask you, you mentioned NC Fit. How many locations do you currently have?
24.
24 locations.
Yeah.
So you've been very successful as an athlete, and many people who put in the effort and focus that you did in athletics are so singularly focused that they have trouble, and I've observed this in friends, transferring then to a career outside of competitor, right? Sponsored athlete. If you were sitting down with an accomplished athlete or not who wanted to, say, get into business, and let's just for the sake of simplicity say it's a similar business, they're somewhere in the Midwest and they want to get into fitness and gyms and so on, what advice would you give them, or resources would you point them to increase the likelihood of success?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I'd ask them, and I get asked this often, is, you know, hey, I want to open up a gym. What do you think? I'm like, okay, well, let's start with these three simple questions, right? Number one, are you qualified to do so, right? What makes you qualified to open up this business? Do you have an expertise in it? Do you, how are you going to basically give yourself this competitive advantage that you know that when you go to open it up, you're going to win,
right?
What is your competitive advantage?
What's the credibility?
Right. Yeah. Just because you like to work out doesn't mean you should necessarily go open up a gym.
Right.
I love to eat. Yeah. I love food. But I sure as hell are not going to open up a restaurant because I'm not qualified to do so. I don't have the training, the expertise, right? And it's okay if you don't in certain areas, just go find an expert in those other areas, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing I'd ask of you is, you know, are you doing it with a strong intention and a strong why, right? Like, what is your why? Why do you want to open up this business? Is it to make money? Because if it's just to make money, just like competing at the CrossFit Games, you need to have a strong internal why, because when your back's up against the wall and it's very challenging, you need to revert back to that why to push through. And in business, it's not always, you know, rainbows and unicorns, right? There's challenging times. And so you need to be able to revert back to your internal why of why you started to be able to do well. So I would say, A, how are you going to win, right? Mm-hmm. Tell me how you're going to win. Why are you better than the other guy down the street? Two, do you have a strong reason why you want to open it? And then three, is it a good time in your life to do it, right? Is it a good time for you to open it? Do you just have a baby? Do you have tons of mortgages and different types of stuff, right? Or is it a good time in your life to go ahead and, you know, go open up this business is really what I like to ask people.
What are the most common mistakes that you see or that you think you avoided? Like if you look back at your business, another way to phrase it so you can tackle it however you want is, what were some of the most important decisions that you made looking back?
I think looking back, it was understanding that back in the day, you weren't going to make money off your competitive fitness career. And so I had to open up a business and I had to open it. And I think one of the best things I ever did was I recognized to try and rob and steal as much as I can knowledge from people around me. So when I was in high school, I worked at the front desk at a conventional gym. Then when I graduated from high school and I went to college, I started working as a sales associate there and I started making good money. So as I'm going to a junior college, I went to West Valley, actually. I was there and I just got woken up. Like, no one cares about me. I was like the jock and I was like the, you know, kind of like the class clown in high school. Then all of a sudden you get to college, it's like, they don't care about you, right? So I really turned a corner. I said, hey, look, you know, I need to take responsibility for what I need to get done. I want to be successful. And so I started going to school full-time, working full-time. But what I also did was I learned how to talk to people. I learned how to sell, which was really important because in my line of work in the fitness industry, you're a coach and you're talking to people, you're coaching them. But if you're a business owner, you also need to learn how to sell. But one of the things I would also do is on the, you know, about twice a week, I would go and ride the elliptical with the owner of the business. And I would just pick his brain, understand what's going on. I think one of those things early on was recognizing I wanted to learn everything I could from his mistakes so I didn't make as many. And one of the things that we've done a lot is delegate out things, right? Not, you know, have enough of a humbleness to be like, hey, look, I can't do everything the best. I need to hire outside people. And I think I learned that early on from him, learning from him some of his mistakes.
How did you convince him to do the elliptical with you? What was the pitch, right? You were in sales. So how did you get the owner to hang out with the former class clown on the elliptical?
So funny enough, he really took me on as like a mentor. He really did. Like he really mentored me really well. And he would ride the elliptical as part of his fitness routine. And I would just go over there and just go meet with him. And I don't think he disliked it because we would just, you know, bullshit, have a good conversation. I think it kind of made the time go by a little bit quicker. Mm-hmm.
Got it. So you would just roll up when he was working out.
I would just roll up.
And when your back is against the wall, you mentioned the why. So when you were competing, and say, this is actually a question that came up at least once from people who are listening to the podcast, wanted me to ask you, what why did you go back to when you were competing in the games?
I mean, at the time, right?
Or sorry to keep rephrasing my questions, but I've had too much caffeine. And that is, when you were, say, behind or you saw someone gaining on you, the why or like what is the self-talk to make sure that you don't fall out of, like that you don't drop the ball or otherwise just get psyched out?
Well, I think positive self-talk is a really hard thing to learn, but it's an important trait to develop. Mm-hmm. And I've learned that over the years with the mindset coach that I work with, where you know, you try and find ways to reframe things in your head. If something's going wrong, instead of saying, oh, my legs hurt, you say, hey, focus on midfoot strike if you're running or whatever, right? You try and rephrase it into a positive. And reverting back to your why, I think it's really important that going into these games, what I would do is I would tell myself that I've made a commitment to myself, my family, to go out there and do this. And I wanted to do it because I wanted to get comfortable with uncomfortable. I wanted to see where I stack up against my competitors, and I wanted to do it for me, right? And at the time, I didn't have as many other obligations. Now, as life changes, right, things change. But at the time, my why was, hey, I made a commitment, I'm going to do this. And I remember one year, we did this Camp Pendleton race, and I was, it's a 10-mile just crazy hill run. And I was like halfway done. I just, you know, I'm like going through like this desert. And I look around, there's no one around. I'm just like, oh gosh. And I see a tarantula. This is a true story. Just walking across. I'm just looking at him like, what the hell? Or a big ass spider. Maybe it wasn't a tarantula. It was a big ass spider. I was like, well, what am I doing out here? Right. And I had to instantly revert back in my head. You know what? I made a commitment. That commitment was I was going to finish out these games. So I better slap myself in the face, stop being a wimp, and finish it. Because if I allowed myself to give in then, what other things would I allow myself to give into? Right. I made a commitment to myself and I wanted to live up to that. Now, over the years, because of other things happening in my life, I haven't been able to make that strong of a commitment. So therefore, I choose not even to go out there and attempt. Mm-hmm.
And I'm very fascinated by these little moments or days or weeks that can really affect the complete trajectory of people's lives. And you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, you get to college age, you realize, all right, I'm no longer the class clown in high school. And you did a course correct, right? You started going to school full time. So what triggered that? Was it a particular conversation? Was it a particular afternoon?
Yeah.
What was it?
So, you know, so going out of high school, I thought I was going to play football. It ended up not working out. So I ended up going to West Valley. And, you know, first day, it wasn't that big of a deal, right? I get there the first day. I'm like, I'm at West Valley. No big deal. I'll transfer to another school in a couple of years. But all my friends had gone to a 4-year Santa Clara University, where I ended up graduating from, right? But I just remember first day of school, we're going around and we're all saying our names, right? And it's like, hey, I'm John. This is my second year. Hey, I'm Mary. This is my, you know, whatever, second semester, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden you have this woman next to me, and I kid you not, right? My first class of my first day at West Valley. And the lady goes, hi, my name is Suzanne. I can't remember the name exactly. She goes, but for a fact, this is my 7th year at West Valley. And I just remember looking at her and looking at this teacher and just being like, dude, I got to get my ass in check and I need to get my shit together, right? And that's what I told myself, right? And so that moment I left there, I went to the counselor's office and said, hey, look, I need to figure out the fastest way to get the heck out of this school. And so I ended up taking full class loads, doing whatever I had to do. I ended up applying to Santa Clara 2 times after that and not being accepted because I tried after 1 year, I didn't get accepted. I tried for like 1.5 years, I didn't get accepted. Then after 2 years, I was accepted, which got me on track to graduate in 4. So I graduated with all my peers, which was great. I graduated with my wife actually, which was really cool. But that was the moment that really like kind of sparked it. Like, dude, like playtime's over. High school's done. You're in the real world and no one really cares about you. You better get your ass in check.
And when you applied, making me think of Rudy a little bit. So you applied, didn't get in, applied, didn't get in, then applied and got in. What did you change in between the not getting accepted and getting accepted?
Well, I mean, I had more courses underneath my belt. So what happened is they didn't have to use my high school GPA anymore.
Right.
Because you're able to only use my college.
They could use your credits that would transfer.
That's right.
Got it. All right. So many questions, but I'm going to pull some in from the audience. This is from Fern Hernandez. What are your thoughts on the frequency of doing CrossFit? Asked another way, what benefits do you lose or gain from doing, say, twice a week versus 4 to 5 times a week?
I mean, I think by design, when you look at like a program, and if it's constantly varied, by design, you should be able to do it, you know, 5 days a week and you should be okay. If the programming is appropriate and the volume is good and you're listening to your body, you should be able to perform that program, you know, 5 days a week because of the variance, right? You should be able to go long one day, heavy one day, you know, below parallel one day. And that just depends on how much effort people put into the program itself. So 2 days is better than no days, but 2 days is also challenging because you go in, you get really sore. And then you recover and then you get really sore again and your body never gets in this rhythm. Mm-hmm. So assuming you go to a gym that has good programming, I think you can go, you know, 5 days a week.
And you and I were also though, just to touch on good programming in the gym when we were messing around, you were demonstrating back squat and we're talking about five by five and so on, these five sets of five reps and so on. If the variance doesn't exist and someone's trying to do five by five, 7 times a week with below parallel squat.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta have a program that has variance, right? So the way we do it at our gym is, you know, we have one person who creates this template, the skeleton, then he creates the workouts, and then we have it peer reviewed by six other of our coaches, and then it gets back to him. So we try and have a lot of checks and balance in our program, because regardless of who's programming the program, there's always going to be some type of bias towards what you like.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Always. And so you need to have other people have checks and balances on that.
How might someone create a skeleton of a program? And I'm not saying just Joe Blow in the street. I'm saying one of your coaches, right? What does that process look like? What are they thinking about or considering as they do it?
Well, I mean, I think they're looking at time domains, right? So you're looking at, you know, are we talking 5 minutes? Are we talking 12 minutes? Are we talking 20 minutes? Are we talking 30 or 40 minute long workouts, right?
Okay, I got it. The total duration.
The total duration of the actual, you know, AMRAP, EMOM, whatever they're doing, right?
Then AMRAP, just for non-CrossFit
AMRAP
people.
Is as many rounds or reps as possible. And then, you know, you start talking about in the skill work, right? What is the theme for the month? Are we trying to develop someone's handstand? Are we trying to, so there's a lot of things in play. It's a challenging topic to discuss briefly, but in theory, it's, hey, let's have some big macro goal, right? Maybe it's to get everybody ready for a 5K that's coming up. Maybe it's to get the skill of, maybe we start noticing that our gym members need benefit in X. Let's create that macro goal. And then during our warmups, make sure we touch base on it several times a week. Then let's have these other goals where it's like we go heavy 2-3 times a week, right? Then we go longer Metcons or metabolic conditioning workouts a couple times a week. And we add in these short burst, high intensity ones a couple times a week. So in skeleton, you want to think about, you want to push, you want to pull, you want to squat once a week, right? You want to incorporate the Olympic lifts as, you know, when you can. And that's kind of like the big picture stuff. Mm-hmm. But you also, when you program, you want to think about kind of this idea of, you know, if I'm programming a workout, I want to think about what's going to keep people moving. So you wouldn't want to do, for example, squats, lunges, jumping air squats, jumping lunges, and whatever, like a bunch of whatever. Because what will end up happening is people will just burn out their legs and they'll just sit there and stand there until they can recover. Mm-hmm. But now if you did, you know, jumping lunges followed by pushups, they're not the same muscle groups, right? They're different functions. And so you can keep your body moving.
And as you mentioned, when we were chatting before recording just the audio, the Olympic lifts generally would come after, say, a familiarity, at least a familiarity, maybe a mastery of the mechanics of, say, powerlifting movements and some gymnastic components.
Well, I think we incorporate the Olympic lifts early on. We do.
How do you do that safely?
I think it ultimately just comes down to the coaches that are doing it, right? How do you start off, you know, make sure that people can do it right with just the PVC pipe or a light bar, and then you can work your way up. But I think the difference is that whereas with the power lifts, it doesn't take as long to develop all the techniques incorporated with it. With the Olympic lifts, it does. And so you need to be okay with doing the Olympic lifts early on, right? Almost from the beginning, it's okay. But you need to do them at a moderate, controlled level versus the back squat. You can kind of push a little bit more. I mean, you could push them all, but you don't want to push the Olympic lifts so much so that you start developing bad habits. Mm-hmm. And the same thing applies to the back squat. It's just a little bit less technical. So the Olympic lifts are a little bit easier to incorporate. You know, they're highly technical.
Sure. Let's just say you have average person off the street or powerlifter comes in. I want to learn Olympic weightlifting. If they have really bad thoracic mobility and shoulder extension, right? So they're here, right? They can barely get their biceps past their ears. Do you have any favorite approaches to helping address that or any suggestions?
You know, our friend Kelly has some good tools at Mobility Wad, right?
Kelly Starrett, yeah.
Yeah, Kelly Starrett. I mean, I think that there's multiple different things you could do, but ultimately you need to commit to it, right? I mean, if you have poor, you know, shoulder range of motion, it's going to take you a while to develop that. And, you know, that doesn't mean you have to avoid all lifts altogether, still do them. Just recognize you need to put in the time, you know, couple, you know, 10, 20 minutes a day to develop the range of motion and mobility. And the best way to do that is by incorporating the movements slow and controlled with light to little, no weight, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to really develop a good squat, try and work on the squat up against the wall with no weight, mm-hmm. and work through the full range of motion of it.
Up against the wall, you mean facing the wall?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Question from Luke Campbell. Ask about his training with former endurance athlete and now coach Chris Henshaw. It was interesting to hear how a giant like Jason could build his aerobic capacity without sacrificing size or strength. How does he do it specifically?
That's a great question. You know, Henshaw's great. you know, years ago, I started looking at some of the results from across the games, and it would be like, you know, top 10, top 10, top 10, top 10, 50th, you know, top 10, top 10. I'd be like, oh boy, I got a glaring weakness there. And so I found Chris, and he really helped me out, and he made running fun for me. He made running.
Who is Chris? Just for so Chris those who don't know.
He's a local guy, right? He's here out of Palo Alto.
In the Bay Area.
Yeah. And he's a former, you know, Ironman triathlete, really successful, but he has a unique way of making running quantifiable and fun. And what I mean by that is, you know, I'll go to the track and before I'd just be like, oh, run 400 meters. I would just like run it aimlessly. But it felt good for him to give me, you know, 100 meter pace goals, 200 meter pace goals, et cetera. And then those goals then turn into something I could really try and shoot for. And I think going back to the whole thing about someone going to the gym is for those people who are interested in doing running or doing types of stuff, having a program that kind of gives you quantifiable numbers to shoot for, I believe is a great way not only to get better results, but also to keep it more fun. Mm-hmm. You don't need to just go out for a 5K on your own. That's cool. I get it. But you should start quantifying what your target numbers are and your target paces. And that's what I did with him. And that's why I was able to maintain those numbers.
When you were at your peak of training, what did your nutrition look like? And were there any go-to supplements on top of that? It's a tricky sort of murky waters that we get into sometimes, and it's fine if any of them were sponsors, but if you could just indicate which were, if that's the case. But diet, so what did your nutrition look like in at the height of training, and then any particular supplements that were kind of your go-to?
So I never have, and I until this day eat as much as what most people probably think I eat. But with the amount I was training, sometimes, you know, just broccoli and cauliflower weren't cutting it for the carbohydrates I needed to retain. So sweet potatoes had to be thrown in and things like that. I try to eat real food, right? I still do. I try and eat real food, and I try and avoid excess amounts of sugar and different types of things. But that doesn't mean that if my daughter wants to go out and, you know, if it's her birthday, I'm not going to eat her birthday cake. And it never has meant that, right? I'm okay with that. I train because at times I want to be able to go in and enjoy a, you know, a margarita with my wife, right? And that's okay. And it always has been that same way, whether I've been training at the highest level or where I'm at today. And, you know, as far as recovery, you know, I partner with a company called Progenics. I think they make a good recovery tool for me. That's something I use. Outside of that, maybe some fish oil, and that's pretty much the extent of it, right? It's just real food. I think people don't realize the value you can get from just consuming real regular food.
And did you track macros and all of that type of stuff?
No, a lot of the guys at the top don't really track all the macros. Some of them do, but not a lot of the guys. You know, a lot of them just work hard, train hard, and just eat appropriately.
Mm-hmm. All right. This is a question I would love to hear your thoughts on. This is from Lee Jackson. What do you picture your workout to be when you hit 60 years of age? That is.
I mean, I think my workout's going to be roughly the way it is right now. Just basically scaled down, meaning, you know, the demands that I have at, you know, my age with, you know, my strength, like we all need a squat. We all need a press. We all need a lift. So whether I'm 60, 30, 50, I still want to be doing those same movements. I just might do a little bit of a less intensity, right? And even now being 31, the intensity I can bring to workouts is a little bit different than when I was 25. My body's been beat up a lot by doing that. And so I just need to recognize it, listen to my body, and recover as well as I can. Mm-hmm. But the amount of volume I'm putting in isn't as much as it used to be. And I assume by the time I'm 60, the amount of volume I'm putting in wouldn't be as much, but the movements would be similar.
Is there any particular type of movement, conditioning, strength, fill in the blank, that you'd really like to work on and develop more now? In other words, you talked about like top 10, 50th place, top 10, top 10. Are there any particular weaknesses that you're trying to work on now? It doesn't have to be limited to the gym either. Like, is there anything in, that you're working on currently?
I mean, obviously, you know, I like rolling jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of things to get better at there. But for me, it's really on the business side, on the family side, right? I'm trying to be the best dad I could be, the best husband I could be. And I'm trying to support our business and run it the best way possible and treat people that way. And that's what I'm really focused on. You know, stealing a line from Mark Cuban, it's just a sport of business, and I'm trying to win at that right now. Mm-hmm. For myself in particular. So that's what I'm focused on. My fitness side, I'm still hitting it all the time, right? I still work out really hard, but I don't have any specific goals other than just to maintain my fitness.
Mm-hmm. So this is actually a segue. We're going to talk about family a little bit, and these were very highly upvoted. So this is a question from Sherry Gall. I've so admired him as an athlete and businessman. His work ethic and determination to continue to improve, as well as his humility, have pushed him to great levels of success. I've also watched his journey through Ava's illness and seen him give back in the midst of it, blood drives, etc. I know behind all this is a good marriage. I'd like him to talk about marriage and how Ava is doing. I would also be fun to hear his perspective on the evolution of the sport, but let's keep that separate. Could you talk a little bit just about the components of a good marriage, and also just tell us a little bit about your family and Ava, since a lot of people listening aren't going to be familiar.
Sure. Yeah. So my wife and I, Ashley, we started dating freshman year of high school. So 14, 15 years old. And we've been together almost ever since. What happened is we started dating for a week, 2 weeks, actually. I thought we were in love, right? I went home. I told my mom, I'm like, Mom, I found the woman I'm going to marry, right? And I was all fired up. And then of course, 2 weeks later, she dumps me because she said I was too nice. Well, you know, a year later, right? She knew, you know, we were meant to be together. So we ended up getting back together again a year later. We haven't been separated since, right? So that was, you know, 15, 16 years old. And so, you know, we went to college, graduated college together, did our thing, got married in 2009, had our first child in 2011, Ava. And then we had our second child in 2014, Caden. Ava was diagnosed with leukemia January 21st, 2016. So about a little over a year ago. And, you know, I think when you talk about what makes a marriage successful, I think it's an obviously a number of things. You have to respect each other. You have to become best friends. You need to be able to be okay with, you know, supporting each other on their journeys. But you also need to align well on difficult times. And I didn't know that until Ava got sick. You know, when you're in high school, you don't know how your wife is going to react or girlfriend is going to react to a negative situation in life. And I think what's really intriguing about what happened to us is my wife and I and my family in general has gotten a lot closer through Ava's diagnosis, primarily because she was so strong and she still is. And that's something that's really exciting for me, because I take on like, hey, you know, we're going to get after this. We're going to be successful. And she was the one who really started that from the beginning. You know, when we first found out Ava had leukemia, we were called to the ER at Stanford ER. Before that, she was having a lot of leg pain and different types of things. It was.
When did that start? How old was she?
So right now she's 5. She'll be 6 in a month. You know, looking back on it now, we probably could have identified that she had leukemia earlier, but everything like had a reason. Like,
sure,
she had an ear infection, then she had another one, then she had another one. And then, you know, the doctor's like, this is the worst ear infection I've ever seen. And we're like, wow, well, her immune system seems kind of suppressed. Like, we didn't really think about it. We're just like, oh, we'll just keep getting her medicine because she has an ear infection. Then it's like, oh, my legs really hurt. I can't walk more than 100 feet without stopping. Oh man, it must be growing pains. Let's get you a trampoline. Let's get you in a PT, all these different things. Then she started having bruising, and that's where we knew something was up. And so we went in for blood work. We called in the ER. And when they told us that night that she had leukemia, it was at like 2 a.m. in the morning. And I just remember, you know, it was a very challenging time for us. And now I've had a lot of time to reflect on it. So I'm a little less, you know, when I used to talk about it, it was a lot harder. Now that I've reflected on a lot, it's a little bit easier to talk about. But I just remember when I told my wife, you know, we went out, you know, I was crying, and she just looks at me. She's like, hey, look, you tell our family, tell our family, let them know she has leukemia. But just tell them that they want to cry, they can cry out outside. But as soon as they walk in the doors, they better be happy and they better have a smile on their face, or else they can't be let in, right? And it was kind of that mentality that was just like, you know, kind of like, you know, she's just like, yeah, hell yeah, we're gonna crush this shit. And then it made me realize like, oh yeah, we're gonna crush it. Like, it was this very much so like football, like, you know, you're in the huddle and like you're in the fight of your life. And it's like, no, we're gonna crush this thing, right? And we've had that mentality ever since. And you know, her strength has been awesome to see from a marriage perspective, right? So that's a kind of a cool thing to find out about your spouse.
For sure. What types of practices or routines, anything really, do you have that helps the family to be as cohesive as possible?
Well, I think we have a lot of really good family support. So we've been super blessed. You know, the night that my daughter was diagnosed, my mom and dad took my son and took him for a month. We were in the hospital for 5 weeks. Right? Lucille Packard, they've done some really great things for us. But you know, like when you see that family around, and then all of a sudden my father-in-law would be there every day. My father-in-law would just be sitting in the waiting room, right? We wouldn't call him. We wouldn't do anything. He would just be sitting there. And that family dynamic has been something that's been really special to see. And it's something that we'll never, I'll never forget. And even now, here we are over a year later, and we still have a lot of challenging times. And it's the family that helps us get through all of it, right? Because my, for example, on Saturday, we were in Vegas. My mom and dad helped watch our children so my wife and I could go have a night out to ourselves. And those are really important things in life that my wife and I, since the beginning, have always said, hey, look, it's, we love our children, but it's me and you first for our relationship. Because if our relationship isn't good, then we're not going to be able to have a solid home for our children. And so we've really tried to set aside time to do date nights and do this and do that, which has really been helpful, especially during this time. Because sometimes we have to have adult conversations. Like right after this, I'm going to go see a counselor because, you know, we need to get some support to help us with this situation. And my wife and I had to have an adult conversation about that to go see a counselor.
Yeah. If you were giving advice to someone who, for instance, just found out their child is diagnosed with X, some type of very intimidating disease, and they wanted any thoughts or advice from you whatsoever, like, for instance, what your wife said, which was, like, you can cry, but it has to be outside. Right. Once you come in, yeah, you have to have a smile on your face. Is there anything else that you would share with them?
I think it's really important to educate yourself, right? Educate yourself on the disease. So my daughter is ALL. It's a specific type of leukemia. It's very treatable, which is awesome, right? There's a lot of them that aren't as treatable. And my heart goes out to those families. I mean, you come sit in the oncology department for a day with me and you'll just be humbled. So what I would say to them is educate yourself. We've had phenomenal healthcare, phenomenal. But there's been one or two times where we've had to catch the doctors because sometimes, you know, they have other things going on. But for me, there's nothing else going on. It's just this. But I need to be able to educate myself on it with all the different medications. What's going on here? What is this? What are the side effects? What should we be looking for? Because those things are critical, especially for us. I mean, we end up in the ER probably once every 2 weeks because of temperatures. But we have to be actively engaged to take the temperature. We have to be actively engaged on what the side effects are of certain medicines. And I think that's the most critical piece is educate yourself on what's going on. Because no one's going to care more than you're going to care.
This is going to seem maybe like a gear shift, but I think it could be related. When we were talking about transfer, when we were in the gym earlier, looking at, say, modeling your push-up position so that it transfers to other movements, your elbows aren't flaring out, looking at deadlifting, say, first and foremost in a conventional stance so that it transfers more to cleans and everything else. You mentioned AMRAP earlier, the as many reps or as many rounds as possible. And you mentioned AMRAP philosophy before I hit record. And I was like, okay, I want to come back to that. So what does that mean? Does it apply to areas outside of the gym?
So it's actually something I've been working on for a while and I've given talks about. It's called the AMRAP mentality. And to me, it's the way that, you know, I kind of live my life and I'm trying to live my life. And what the AMRAP mentality really means is think about if someone said to you, hey, I want you to do as many push-ups as you can in a minute. While you're doing them, you're just focused on that, right? You're not focused on anything else. You're just focused on the push-ups. And then when you're done with that, you move on. Right now, I'm podcasting with you. This is what I'm focused on. I'm AMRAPing with you right now. We're trying to do the best we can together. But what I'm not doing is on my phone, right? And talking to you and trying to work out at the same time, right? I'm not doing that because, you know, I think nowadays, I would make the argument, I don't know if we're less productive or more productive than we were 20 years ago. Because 20 years ago, when you're at work, you're working. When you're at home, you're at home. Now it's this huge carryover. So what I found myself doing for many years, and I had to really nip myself in the butt, and I still am trying to get a lot better, is I wouldn't be focused on my family or focused on what I was doing. I'd be focused on other things. There was times where I would go to dinner and I would be having dinner with my wife and I wouldn't remember anything we talked about because I would be thinking about the CrossFit competition I had coming up, right? And that was an example of me not AMRAPing, not being present and focused on what I was doing. So the theory is you identify your focus, right? Whatever it may be. And you know, for me, it's family, fitness, business. Then you work hard at it, right? Whatever it may be. Then you switch gears and you do this throughout your day. And then every now and then you need to reevaluate. So I'll give you an example. For a while, I was going competing at the highest level in CrossFit, owning the business, and I had the family. Then I had more children, the business grew, and the competition got harder. So I decided to switch gears and go team because I didn't have as much time to allocate to these other things. So I had to switch gears, evaluate what was really important to me, and then do that. But then when my daughter got sick, it was another time for me to reevaluate. What am I trying to really focus on, and how many things can I actually AMRAP? So now I chose not to compete because I want to do the best I can at business Then I want to switch gears and go best I can with family. And then I still want to work out, but I can't spend as much time on it. And that's kind of the AMRAP mentality is identify your focus, work hard at it, and switch gears. And then every now and then, reevaluate and get rid of some of the stuff on your plate.
And when you're reevaluating, do you sit down with a pad and a pen and write it out? Do you have a set time when you might do that, in the morning or at night? Like, if you could just describe perhaps some of the details of what that looks like.
I mean, reevaluating happens with big moments in your life, such as your daughter getting sick, or you're getting married, or you have children. You have reevaluate with the things you're going on. You used to love maybe playing video games for 3 hours a day. Once you have a kid, you need to reevaluate. You can't do that anymore, right? You just can't. You need to reevaluate those times. And so reevaluation happens kind of internally for me, whether I'm, on the bike, just kind of like, thinking in my thoughts or whatever it may be, but I identify every so often when I reevaluate. But on a consistent daily basis, I try and check in with myself and try and ask myself, hey, did I do the best job today as I could to be a father, to be a husband, to be a business owner? And did I maintain my fitness? Did I do that today? And if the answer is yes, hell yeah. But if the answer is no, then there's always tomorrow, right? And I think if you do those micro goals on a daily basis, it doesn't lead to these oh shit moments where you wake up and you've been doing the same thing for 5 years and you're unhappy, right? You need to start taking that into your own hands on a daily basis and evaluating.
What are some of your goals right now from a business standpoint?
I mean, I just think that service-based fitness is a way to go. I really do. I feel very passionate about it. I think that
what does that mean?
Just service. Like, you walk into a gym, I want to be service. I want someone to help me. I want their guidance and direction. You know, think about hotels. You go into a hotel gym, the Four Seasons, everywhere else is like, hello, sir, how can I help you? This, that. You go to the gym, there's no one there. You just get on the elliptical and you have an aimless workout, no direction, no guidance. So from a business perspective, I want to bring service to the hotels. I want to bring service to corporate wellness, where instead of people just going to the gym and, you know, wearing their headphones, now all of a sudden they're creating connections, and that helps with productivity in the workplace. It creates with fostering this sense of more culture in the workplace. And then also I want to do that on the, commercial side, open to the public. I want to be experts in the best at service-based fitness, right? Bringing the highest level of quality coaching combined with quality programming in a fun atmosphere. That's what we're really focused on right now.
This, then, if we could rewind the clock, this is from Tyler Eggeman, I think it is. If you, that means Jason, could go back to 2008 after winning the CrossFit Games, what advice would you give yourself in regards for training for the games and or business? Yeah, what advice would you give yourself at that time? Doesn't have to be actually related to games or business. I'd say, hey, what advice, period?
The advice I would say is, earlier on, identify this whole concept of AMRAP mentality and evaluate more regularly, because there's times in my life that I regret not spending quality time with, but I mean, I don't necessarily regret, because it's got us where we're at today. Mm-hmm. But there's been times where I haven't been the most present father. I've been doing a lot of different things, and I wish I had learned that earlier on. At least now when I travel, or like this morning, I left the house at 4 and I'm not going to be home until later. At least now, every time I do that, I recognize that it's a sacrifice I'm making, but that I have to accept it and then, try and make it right in the future, right? But at least being aware that there's sacrifice. I think before it was just kind of like I was trying to just do so much. Now I need to identify and say no to more things so I can really start pinpointing my focus.
The question I had earlier about how you go about doing that is still one I'd like to dig into a little bit, because I think it's so important. So for instance, I was chatting a few months ago with this older gent. He's in his 60s. He has a bunch of kids, and every quarter he gets a report card from his wife, and the report card is 0 to 10 in 4 categories. He's got provider, husband, father, lover. Those are the 4.
Wow.
And he owns his own company, at least one company, and travels a lot. So let's say he's traveling, but it's for business purposes, and he's opening up new manufacturing plants or whatever it might be in China, who knows. So he's gone. So he might get a 10 out of 10 in provider, but he's going to probably be very low on the lover score, and so on and so forth. Maybe 5 out of 6 on the others, who knows. And it's allowable as long as he has a good average. So it's like one can drop as long as the others are higher.
Yeah.
And so on. How do you keep track of reprioritizing or think about that? Is it all in the head, or do you put it down anywhere, or is it something that you try to do at the end of each workday? I know we talked about it a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's just in my head. I think it's just constant evaluation, whether I'm, you know, I like to, let's just say, you know, be alone with my thoughts in like in the garage working out. And I just think about, you know, hey, what am I doing right now? What am I doing well? What can we do better at? How can I be better at this? And it's just that constant pursuit of being better at whatever I'm doing. And I think it's an internal conversation with myself. Mm-hmm. And I think that if I ever get complacent or comfortable, that's where I start getting nervous. And I think I want to get uncomfortable in business. I want to get uncomfortable and get out there and start sharing my message of what I'm trying to do and what we're trying to accomplish and provide for more people to do what they love for a living. And these are the conversations I have in my head, right? Is, hey, Ava's getting better. Now I can start focusing a little bit more on this, but don't forget about this, you know, and things like that.
Do you have any favorite books or books that you've gifted to other people, either or both?
The one that stands out to me the most, I read a lot. I think there's some really poor books at the airport. I really do.
Sure.
Anyways, for me, I like more of a practical application book. I like a book like Mark Cuban's Sport of Business. I like it because it gets me fired up. I like it because it's a real story from a real guy, just saying like it is. And it's easy reading. It's not so analytical and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so that's the book I like.
Got it. Let's talk about morning rituals, if you have any. So this is from Da SG. No, or in there. SJ, excuse me. What are some morning rituals or reflections that he does to keep passions alive while juggling children and life's twists and turns? So I would say let's focus on the routines or rituals. Like, do you have any, if we look at the first 90 minutes of your day, and I'm sure it varies, but generally speaking, are there certain routines, habits, elements that you have?
I'd say in general, it's probably some type of exercise. In general, there's exceptions to that, right? But in general, it's exercise, whether it be jujitsu, or, you know, hitting it in my garage, whatever it is. I like to get the body moving and I like to get flowing early in the morning.
Do you do that before breakfast, after breakfast?
Before.
Before breakfast.
Yeah. So that's before the kids get up. That's before my wife is up. That's before everything.
What time is that typically, would you say?
I mean, it varies. You know, it used to be a lot earlier and now it's like, I mean, well, this morning I left early and yesterday I left early, but on average it's probably like six.
Six.
Yeah, because some days it's a lot earlier, some days it's seven.
And you're exercising on an empty stomach?
Yeah.
Do you drink coffee?
I do. I love coffee.
Do you drink coffee before your workout? Do you save that for later? How many cups of coffee do you have a day?
I probably have one and a half.
Okay.
Very moderate. Two, maybe. I love coffee. But what I would do is normally exercise, come in, see the kids. I'll make my coffee, like doing pour overs. I want to get a really cool espresso machine. That's what I'm working on next. And, you know, hang out with the kids, they get breakfast, boom, they go off to school and I go off to work and we do our thing. And then I'll be there and I'll, you know, I'll go to meetings, I'll go to different gyms. I'll try and just see what's going on. Then sometimes I'll do, workout. I'll take one of our classes, right, throughout the Bay Area. And then I'm always home for dinner at 5:30 with the family. And then I get back on emails and different stuff around 7:30 till about 10. Because the kids go to sleep. Mm-hmm. So basically I just regiment my day is like, it's exercise, get the body moving. It's time with the family briefly in the morning. They go to school, I go to work. Then when I get home at 5:30, we have dinner, we hang out. Then for the rest of the night, I'm doing work and I go to bed. I try and go to bed by 10:30, and then do it all over again.
Do you have any particular, and maybe this doesn't happen to you, but when you have so many different hats, right? I mean, you have your business owner, father, husband, certainly competitor, perhaps not going to the games necessarily, but still you have extreme athletic drive. Do you have insomnia or do you find it easy to sleep? Do you ever have insomnia? Are you so?
No, I find it pretty easy to sleep. You know, you think with the different stresses I have, no, I think it's because I exhaust myself throughout the day.
Right.
I generally run at a high, like some people say it's like the full throttle or like, you know, like I generally run on a high level throughout the duration of the day.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like a kid. You know, it's like,
yeah,
and then all of a sudden they get to like bedtime. It's like, boom.
Yeah,
it's kind of what happens to me.
You definitely have a sort of high standard RPM, which is good. Do you have any wind down routines or anything you like to do before bed?
I mean, generally it's answering a lot of emails because during the day I'm doing a lot of other stuff. It's answering a lot of emails, getting back to people. And then sometimes my wife and I will watch a show together, but that's pretty much it.
That's it. And then faceplant.
And then faceplant. And then on the weekends, I like, you know, we like to travel. We like to go do things. Like last weekend or this weekend coming up, we're going to Disneyland with my daughter. And the weekend after, we're going to Mexico to see one of our locations, but also have a good time. So we try and travel and as a family and have those times.
Who do you go to for business advice?
I mean, I got a few. I mean, you know, we have a few mentors that have really helped out. Some of our corporate partners, Western Digital is one of them. Some of the executives in there have really been amazingly helpful just in asking about things, because for me in my industry, sometimes I get overwhelmed. So I need to get outside my industry to start asking what's going on. And, you know, I have also friends through different sponsorships that I have that they've really helped me out from, you know, Paul and I have a lot of people. And then in the beginning,
who would they be?
Paul Gomez, this guy, Mike Cordano, Jerry, and then Joe Gigantino back in the day, right? He was like the original guy that really kind of took me under his wings from a business perspective. And then this guy, Min, taught me everything to do with sales.
Okay. So wait, so is Joe the fellow on the elliptical?
Yep. Joe's the elliptical, and Min was a guy who came over on a ship from Vietnam, got in a concentration camp in, I want to say like Korea or something, and then ended up getting here selling perfume door to door. And now he's doing really well for himself. So straight up hustler.
How did you meet Min?
He was a gym sales guy, and I wanted to be like him because he was making big checks.
So you met him at the same time that you were also later doing the elliptical.
Yeah.
Mentoring sessions.
Yes. Yeah, so what was happening? I was working the front desk. And so Min would put in his sales slips and I looked at his commission slips and I was like, dude, what's going on? Teach me how to sell. And he did. And that was really a cool experience because I learned how to talk to different people, identify what their wants and needs were, and, you know, see what's going on. But it was also a time in my life where I started to recognize that you need to run an ethical business. Just because you make money, making money is not everything in life. Running a very ethical, successful business is critical for me. And what would happen is I would sell them the dream, like, hey, join our gym for $9.99 a month and, you know, you're in the best shape of your life. But they wouldn't. And I knew I was selling them a false hope. And so that's when I got into the kind of like the group coaching style, which just changed the game for me.
I want to talk about two pieces of that. What made Min so good at selling?
I mean, the best way to describe him is straight up hustler. I mean, just hustler. Like,
right. But like but for some people, that's going to conjure the image of like some guy with a fold out table and 3-card money who's like picks up and runs away from the cops when the sirens start.
He lived by the code, you know, ABCs, always be closing. He would just identify what someone needed to hear and he would work really hard at doing it. And there was no sugarcoating. He would follow up with people. He would tour people well. He showed me from an early age that there's no easy answer in life. You got to put in the work and you got to get on the phones and hustle it. And you want to get leads, go to the collections who like all the members who are past due, call them all and try and collect it. Go back to people who visited the gym from 5 years ago and call them. And I would just end up with stacks, be on the phone. Maybe you get one.
What's the what would be an example of say a potentially successful script or question when you're calling up the Glengarry leads that you have from 5 years ago?
Yeah.
what does a good call look like? If someone in your company had that job today and you're like, here's a stack, better start smiling and dialing, what would you tell them?
I mean, I think you start off just saying, hey, I'm Jason Kalipa with NC Fit. Just want to follow up with your, you know, whatever. I think really what you would try and do is just identify, hey, so, you know, how was your experience? We're just checking up. Did you enjoy your experience? What were you looking for out of your experience? And you identify what they're looking for, right? And they say, oh, well, did you hear that we actually just added this program that, you know, kind of tailors to what they were looking for? And I think finding out what people are looking for, I think is really important. Instead of trying to force feed what you think they want, find out what they do want.
Right. Asking good questions.
Yeah.
What are the magic ingredients to a good tour? You said Min toured well.
Oh man, he toured the best, you know, to some people it would just be treadmills and ellipticals, but to him it was money making pieces of machinery that you could sell. Hey, this is the, you know, lifestyle 1032, right. Top of its class. It comes with a fan. It sings music to you, right? And you just...
It's like selling a Mercedes.
You know, it's like... And then you talk about the treadmill. Then you talk about this and that. Oh, by the way, let me show you downstairs. Did we... You know, and then finally you get down and it's like, oh, Did we tell you though that you could, for an additional $8 a month, you can get towel service? And let me show you where those towels go. And let me show you what they look like. And let me show you the quality of them, right? And those are the type of things you learn, right? It's just
did he have a strong accent or no?
Oh yeah.
No, that's great though, because it just shows you like it does not matter. You know?
Very strong Vietnamese.
But he powered through it. I mean, I used to live in San Jose and used to go to a Vietnamese barbershop, and it's one of my best friends growing up was Vietnamese on Long Island. And like when anyone has a strong accent, it's a strong accent. But he was able, despite that, to just power through and become one of the top, if not the top.
Oh, he was the dude.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. He was a baller. Learned a lot from him.
All right. I'm going to ask just a few more questions, and then maybe we can do a round two sometime, since we're basically in the same neighborhood. One would be, if you could put any message on a billboard. And this is a metaphor, really, but just to get a message out to millions of people. Let's assume it's non-commercial, right? So it can't be an advertisement. But what might you put on a billboard?
I mean, I would love to get this out to as many people as you could possibly push this to. It would just say, like, just be easy. It's like, life is good. Yeah. And I mean that because I really believe that. Meaning, when you've seen children, you know, when you've seen children in oncology, it changes your whole perspective. Yesterday I was on the road and this woman is just tailing me so hard, coming around, getting all crazy. I just look over at her. I'm just like, easy, like easy. Like, life is good. You have a beautiful car. You look healthy and young and pretty, whatever. Like, chill the hell out, you know? And I think people, they get so caught up in these little problems and they let it manifest into something so great that they never stop to reflect that, hey, look, life is okay, but I choose to look at the world, me personally, I choose to look at the world in a pair of glasses, not sunglasses. I choose to look at things in a brighter light, because especially after, you know, I spent 3 nights in the ICU and my daughter was on the brink of not good. You know, you don't go to the ICU as a cancer patient. I mean, it was really, really not good, right? It was the only time that we really felt like it was a life and death situation. I'm sitting there, and there's this baby to my left, and he's 7 months old, and his dad comes in. The baby had never left the ICU before. And all night they were sucking fluid out of this kid's lung because he had pneumonia or whatever it was. And I'm sitting there for 2 days straight, right? Up all night eating muffins, looking at my daughter over here, like really not in good shape. And this guy, this baby over here and the dad, and I'm just sitting there like, and people are complaining that there's traffic and people are complaining. And it's just, no, I'm not expecting people. I never want anybody to be in our position. I don't. But what I want them to do is to really reflect on their life and realize that everybody has something to be grateful for. If you think about it, right? You're alive, you're well, you have the ability to get up and go do some amazing things, you know? And I think that sometimes people get caught up and they forget that. And I think they could use a reminder of that.
Yes. I think that is where we should wrap up. That is, I think that is, if among many other things, what I want people to remember. So that's a fantastic point. And just in closing, where can people find you online, learn more about you, learn more about your business and anything else you'd like them to take a look at?
Yeah. I mean, NC Fit, right? NC.fit would be great. I'm very active on Instagram, Jason Kalipa. I don't use Facebook as much. I probably should. And Twitter,
right.
I probably
Kalipa,
use that more.
Kalipa, K-H, right?
K-H-A-L-I-P-A. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do these things called Box of Business. There's seminars we do for affiliate owners or gym owners. My partner and I, JP, we do them all for charity and pediatric cancer. And so, you know, back to one of the questions, we have a blood drive coming up in September. We do that on a nationwide scale at different CrossFit gyms around the world.
Just to place it, since people might be listening 5 years from now, so it's 2017.
Yeah.
Okay,
well, we're going to do it on a yearly basis.
Oh, you are? Okay,
oh,
got
yeah.
it. All right.
But at the end of the day, you could just find me, nc.fit, jasonkleepa.com, or jasonkleepa on Instagram. You can find a lot of stuff about me on that.
Awesome. Well, guys, say hello to Jason, and it's great to meet you, man. It's been a long time coming. I mean, I've followed your career for a while now, so it's really nice to meet in person. And thanks, Mark Bell, Mr. Smelly himself, Mr. 1,000-pound back squat, for making the introduction. And so first and foremost, I should say thank you for taking the time. I appreciate you making the time today.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Really fun. And there's so much more to dig into. So hopefully folks will be able to do a round two and get more questions answered. And if you want to see some additional video, make sure you go to tim.blog Athleticgreens.com/podcast, where you can find show notes for this episode, links to everything, books and so on mentioned, links to Jason, his sites and so on, as well as some demos and work in the gym that we recorded earlier. So you can find that at tim.blog/podcast. And as always, and until next time, thank you for listening. Hey guys, this is Tim again. Just a few more things before you take off. Number one, this is Five Bullet Friday. Do you want to get a short email from me? Would you enjoy getting a short email from me every Friday that provides a little morsel of fun before the weekend? And Five Bullet Friday is a very short email where I share the coolest things I've found or that I've been pondering over the week. That could include favorite new albums that I've discovered. It could include gizmos and gadgets and all sorts of weird shit that I've somehow dug up in the world of the esoteric as I do. It could include favorite articles that I've read and that I've shared with my close friends, for instance. And it's very short. It's just a little tiny bite of goodness before you head off for the weekend. So if you want to receive that, check it out. Just go to 4hourworkweek.com. That's 4hourworkweek.com, all spelled out, and just drop in your email and you will get the very next one. And if you sign up, I hope you enjoy it. This episode is brought to you by LegalZoom. I have used LegalZoom myself for many of my businesses, and many of the icons on this podcast have actually used LegalZoom. For instance, Matt Mullenweg of WordPress fame, CEO of Automattic, which is now worth more than $1 billion, first incorporated his company on LegalZoom. LegalZoom is a reliable resource that more than 1 million people have already trusted to help with their businesses. Whether that's setting up a will, doing a proper trademark search, forming an LLC, setting up a nonprofit, or finding simple cease and desist letter templates. Man, do I use a lot of those. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but they do have a network of independent attorneys available in most states. They can give you advice on the best way to get started, provide contract reviews, and otherwise help you run your business. And important, there are no surprises. LegalZoom provides complete transparency. That means upfront pricing, customer reviews, and a satisfaction guarantee. Check out LegalZoom.com today to see how they can make life better and easier for you and your business. If you're pretending to be a lawyer on the internet, then you are asking for trouble. Put together the safety nets, get your T's crossed and your I's dotted. Enter promo code TIM, T-I-M, at LegalZoom.com to save 15%. That's T-I-M for 15% off. Check it out, LegalZoom.com. This episode is brought to you by Inktel. I've used them personally. Ever since I wrote the 4-Hour Workweek, I've been asked over and over again how I choose to delegate tasks, how I do 80-20 analysis, and so on. At the root of many of those decisions is a simple question, actually two questions. Number one, how can I invest money to improve my quality of life? I use that in investing as well. The second, how can I spend a little money or moderate money to save significant time? Inktel is one of those investments. They're a turnkey solution for all of your imaginable customer care needs. I used Inktel during the launch of the 4-Hour Body, which was very, very involved, and they provided 24/7 customer service for my Land Rush campaign because it was critical for me to take care of every person who purchased my books and participated. This allowed me to focus on the things that I am better at, my strengths, like the marketing plan that we'd worked on for 6 months, implementing that. Inktel trains their experienced customer service reps to know your business and your products inside and out and make your customers raving fans. They answer more than 1 million customer service requests every year, and they can do so across all platforms, including email, phone, social media, text, even chat. Leaving your customers with poor service or just mediocre service, which by the way, in a competitive pool is a huge liability. Long wait times or unanswered messages carries a massive cost and risk to your business. Inktel removes the logistics and headaches of this type of communication, allowing you to focus on your strengths and grow your business. It can be a real competitive advantage, and I see many, many e-commerce companies and tech companies thinking of customer service as a good enough checkbox or an afterthought. And just like Airbnb used design in innovative ways to be a competitor and to win, you can do the same thing with customer service. So as a listener of this podcast, you can get up to $10,000 off. It's a big discount.
$10,000 off your startup fees and costs by visiting inktel.com/Tim. So check it out. For more info, go to inktel.com, inktel.com/Tim.